What is a solo cup doing? What is that thing? Is that water?
No, that's my beer, man.
In a solo cup? What?
I told you I came down. I took a shower. I wasn't going to go back up there to get my nice glass.
Oh, my God. Right. This guy's at a kegger. Jeez. I just see this red solo cup. Okay, whatever.
I'm not drinking it out of the can.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Good evening, Ted. It is Friday. It's episode 151 and truly one of my favorite nights of the week. How are you?
I am good, my friend.
Nice. Yeah, I am doing well, too. Superman is good. You are well.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
You work in a school. I just, you know.
I guess so.
I just do what I can to keep the kids going. That's all.
So I wanted to thank you. We had our Christmas beer extravaganza.
Right. This past month.
So we had
6 weeks
of Christmas beer trade off, tit for tat. I had three, you had three. But you, my friend, are a good friend because I still have one of your beers from Christmas. The Van Yuletide Belgian Ale.
That was the bonus.
And that's from Los Angeles Ale Works.
That's the bonus beer, yeah.
Yeah, Willamette Lemon Drop Spices. And it says, warm up with this spiced Belgian ale featuring cinnamon, clove, ginger, and pink peppercorns.
Say that without a pop filter.
Yeah, it's a bad sweater beer. Oh, God, it exploded. It's been wanting out of the can for...
Yeah, since Christmas.
And let me wipe up my mess. And what's your beer tonight? And then we'll talk about this one a little bit and see what you have.
Cool. So I have the Brewery Mischief.
Brewery Mischief.
It, too, is a hoppy Belgian-style ale.
Sounds like Gremlins or something.
I know. Mischief. It's got a cool... It's from the brewery. It's in Placencia. Is that how you say that? Placencia, California?
I think it's Placentia.
Not Placenta, California?
I hope not.
All right. Here it is. Here it is. Let's crack this. I will say that our friends over at Gather.Town, they listened to the pod last week, and they really appreciated the little nod that we gave them, and also the ASMR beer opening, so they appreciate that.
Oh, nice. There you go. Well, this is, I would say it's definitely has a Belgian flair. The Belgian coriander,
uh-huh.
It has that banana sort of flavor behind it.
Okay.
But with lots of Christmas spice, clove and the cinnamon and everything that I read. Yeah, it's a Christmas beer.
There you go.
It is. And what I like about it, though, is so I've done some Christmas and other seasonal brews, you know, Christmas pumpkin ales and things.
Oh, yourself?
Myself, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The first ones I did blew me away with the spice being so intense.
Over the top, yeah.
Over the top. And then I'm like, man, I need to just cut the spice down a little bit. And I've done them before, and then I did them again, and I was like, oh, still too much. And then I did this, I don't even know what you call it, like an off-flavor class at Valley Brewers that they put on for, you know, home brewers to find out like how to make good beer, how to determine what makes your beer bad if it does turn out bad and so on. And the guy giving the class said, if ever you do a seasoned beer with spice, he said, always first take the recipe, cut it in half, you know, the spices, cut it in half, and then cut them in half again. And he said it might even still be too much.
Wow.
What I would say about this spiced beer is they probably cut it down to like a tenth.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's definitely not over the top. I mean, it's good. It gives you that Christmassy sort of clove, cinnamon spice that, you know, the pink peppercorns, whatever those are. It gives you all that, but it's not so strong that you're just like puckering your mouth going, oh, this is too spicy.
The whole time.
You know, and I don't mean spicy and like hot peppers. I mean spicy and just like, you know, like salt and pepper and.
Yeah, like off. Like it wouldn't, yeah, like too much.
It's like if you dumped like half a bottle of cinnamon in your oatmeal, you're like, ugh, this is too spicy, you know? And, but no, this is good. This is good. I really appreciate the bonus beer. You're going to have some homebrew coming your way time I saw you, so I'll make up for it in that regard.
Oh, yeah.
So.
That's better than this.
Well, I don't know. I guess so. We'll see how it turns out. But and how's yours?
Mine is good. Mine is, it's so funny because like the way you described yours or the way you described your beer tonight, it's like it lets the Belgian style come through.
For sure. Yeah.
And then this, because it says it's a hobby Belgian style ale, I was like, oh, maybe it won't be so Belgian. Like it has the Belgian notes on the nose and maybe on the palate, but the aftertaste and the what settles on your palate is more of the hoppy flavor. So I like that a lot.
Cool. So yours is a little bit more.
It's middle of the road.
Rather than what I would say with a lot of Belgian ales, like yeast forward.
Right.
Yours is more hop forward.
Definitely hop forward. There,
yeah,
that's,
gotcha.
Thank you for deciphering my gobbledygook.
Well, that's the thing that makes a Belgian ale a Belgian ale is that like sweeter, fruitier yeast. I don't even know that yeast flavor.
Yeast. But yeast, yeah, that's it. That's all you need to say.
Yeah, like yeast farts make for good beer, you know?
I mean, this has the banana on the nose, and it has, you know, and it has all the characteristics of the Belgian.
For sure, yeah.
But it's got the hoppy finish, so I enjoy it.
And what's the name again?
It's called, the place is called The Brewery, and it's
The Brewery.
B-R-U-E. R-Y.
Mischief. That looks cool.
Mischief, yes.
Yeah. And where did you find it? Was this at your local?
This is my boss's boss gave me a little six pack.
Oh, nice.
For Christmas. So I had to, I backburnered her six pack.
Ah, another Christmas beer. Look at this. We have Christmas beers abound.
It's the end of February and we're still drinking Christmas beer. free, quote unquote, free beer. You know,
that's right. Love it. I know. I love free beer. All right, man. How was your week this week?
Good, good. But I want to hear about the birthday party, the sleepover. Let's start there.
All right. So, yeah, it was Tim's birthday last week, and he had two friends come over. One of his friends did not sleep over, so he stayed till about 10 o'clock at night, though. He did stay late, and then parents came, picked him up. And then his other friend did sleep over, and we had pancakes and whatnot in the morning, pancakes and, you know, sausage and such. But the funny thing about it, though, so they watched
Jurassic Park.
They watched Jurassic Park. Thank you. Yeah, they watched
I was not
Jurassic
there, but
Park.
I was right outside the window. No, I'm just kidding.
And after the movie, you know, I made popcorn, uh-huh. And all that. And after the movie, me and Clarissa were throwing darts in the garage.
Your new dartboard, your Chris's dartboard.
The new dartboard, yeah. And I made the nice chalkboard cricket.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like mark off all of your, you know, you hit the 20s, the 19s, right. 18s, bowls and all that stuff. So me and Clarissa were throwing and the movie ends. So the boys all come out into the garage and they're like, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're throwing darts. You know, you tell them. So they want to throw darts. And so we got them set up with some stools and everything so they could kind of have the same advantage. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And they were throwing. So the next like 2 to 4 days, both kids were like, Mom, we need a dartboard. Next time we go to Tim's house, we're playing darts, you know? And like, they were so enamored by darts. They just loved darts. So Ethan forgot some clothes. You know, he left like a jacket or something here. So the next day, Clarissa.
Yeah, as kids do.
Yeah. Clarissa and Mikey ride over, drop off the jacket, you know, and Ethan's talking all about the darts, telling his mom about the darts all night long. When he got home, it was darts. The next, you know, on Monday with school, you know, we go over to Jacob's and he's telling his mom all about the darts. For something with like 7 and 8 year olds, they love darts, man.
Oh yeah. You know, and it was so funny because the last time we were,
they like throwing weapons.
The last time we were together we went to Figaro Mountain, and the boys went in the back, and they were throwing darts there too. So Bryce was throwing darts with Timmy and Mikey.
Oh yeah,
and I think they stabbed somebody, and then they were like, "Oh, darts going away." they missed wild, and it hit close to somebody's foot or something, and it was just like, "All right, kids, the darts are over. Your parents aren't tending to you as closely as Ted said he would."
Yeah. You know? Well, that's the thing. I mean, they're throwing weapons.
And I was trying to get another Figaro Mountain. I was trying to get another, like, American cone or something.
Yeah, so, I mean, pretty much it was a lot of fun. I mean, they really had a good time. And, you know, with all the COVID stuff,
it's hard.
Kids just getting together to be kids again when you're 6, 7, 8 years old.
So important.
They just loved it. They had such a fun time. And like I said, it was just a couple of kids, you know, it wasn't like a huge party or a bunch of, you know, bunch of kids getting together, but just kids seeing their friends and hanging out and stuff, man. It was a lot of fun.
You had sleepovers as a kid, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, of course.
It's so funny because I had sleepovers and I went to sleepovers, and there was always a couple of kids that couldn't sleep over, like, you know, maybe like your friend, who knows what the circumstances are.
The main thing is it would have been his first time ever sleeping in a different, so he was nervous and he said, "I want to stay as late as I can, and then, you know, maybe we'll try again next time." So he was a little bit nervous for sleeping over, and so he stayed till like close to 10 o'clock, and then when he left, then everyone else, then the other boys went to bed.
Yeah.
So I think next time it rolls around, I have a feeling he's going to be like, "Okay, I think I can handle this," you know.
Pony up, yeah. And it's so funny because there's a couple times where we have like bigger sleepovers, you know, and you have like five friends over and they sleep over. And every now and then there was a kid who didn't sleep over, but then back when we were kids, the mom or the parent would bring the kid back in the morning, so they still had like the full sleepover experience. And I was like, "Oh man, my mom's just leaving me over here. She didn't care about us coming home, whatever."
I always enjoyed sleepovers, and the big thing. So my birthday's on, you know, March 15th. It's coming up, and one of the best things about, you know, having a birthday, and especially like Clarissa's the same. Hers is June 13th, and one of the best things about that is, when your birthday is mid-month like that, then you have Friday the 13th sleepovers. So if my birthday landed on a Sunday, then I would have a Friday the 13th. And I know Clarissa probably did too. Hers is on
the
13th.
On the day.
But yeah, but it's, you know, the funny thing is, though, we would have these Friday the 13th sleepovers. And, you know, it happened once every few years or whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
But it's so funny, though, because you wind up with, like, a bunch of wild boys on Friday the 13th. And I'm thinking to myself, what were my parents thinking? You know, because we were like maniacs.
It was a different time. It was a different time for sure.
It was one of those things where, like, all right, you know, we go downstairs in the basement. Uh-huh. And it was like, just throw out the sleeping bags.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, whatever, there'd be 10 of us or something. And it was like 10 sleeping bags just strewn across the floor. And you're talking like mid-March. But yeah, I mean, there were years, though, like in the basement, just, okay, everybody's down here and I don't care what the temperature is. You know, if you guys are cold, that's on you. You're all sleeping down here, you know. But yeah, how was your week? How was your week?
My week was good. We got a routine for Bryce. So Bryce is, you know, he doesn't like running. No one likes running. You hate running, right? Don't you?
Well, the difference between running and bicycling, bicycling, I get to sit down, I get to eat and drink, you know, running, it's like too much like work.
Well, he has to do a run at school, and we're like, we were telling him, well, when you go back to school, you're going to have to run. And he's like, well, there's no way we could figure out how much the lap at school is and what kind of, you know, parameters they have. And I was like, really? You want to check?
This is like a fitness test or
something? Yeah. They have a Tuesday run. They have to run, run laps at the school on every Tuesday.
Right.
They run every day, but Tuesday is the day that they monitor and they check. And you get.
And remind me, he's seventh grade?
He is sixth grade.
Oh, sixth grade. Okay.
Sixth grade. So he has 3 years at middle school here. And the middle school does this pretty regular. So Audrey's been through it all 3 years, and she's like, yeah, you got to run, you know, 8 laps minimum and 10 laps if you're, you know, if you're getting really good at it, to make sure you get the A. So, you know, challenge accepted. I said, I can find out how much the lap is. And then he's like, well, what are you going to do with that information? I said, well, I'll map out a little course. And I found that one of these small blocks here, right out right next to the house, is a third of a mile. And that's the what the coach said, what the PE teacher said. Okay. It's a third of a mile a lap. And you got to get 8 laps in 35 minutes or something like that to be physically fit or to get the A. And I said, well, so we'll just start. So this week we started doing it. And we are doing 6 laps right now. And, you know, and he was a little down on himself. And he was like, oh, I only got 6 laps. I'm never going to be able to do it. And I'm like, no, you got to start somewhere. You start here and, you know, you run, walk, and then you work your way up to it.
So a third of a mile times 6. So one lap is a third and he does it 6 times?
Yeah, well, we're supposed to do it 8.
Wow, that's a good run.
We're supposed to do 8 times to get the okay. A, but right now we started doing it 6 times because we're run walking and he's still, you know, we're building up our endurance. So yeah. First week we were kind of down, he was down on himself some days he was not, and we're running at like 6:30 in the morning. So it's pretty early.
Sun's just cracking.
Yeah. Cold. It was so windy this week. I don't know.
Oh, it's so windy. Yeah.
And I was like, but you're doing good. You're improving every day, you know? And he goes, oh, but I'll never get there. And I'm just like, oh. So I called an audible and I emailed the teacher and I was just like, please, after class, could you just pull him aside and be, here's his numbers. Like, just give him a little pep talk. And, you know, so he talked to him after class and he was just like, oh, look, you're improving every day this week. You've gotten better on a couple laps. And so that was our time this week. And we always do a little hit training after the run.
Battle rope.
Yeah. And today we did, like, it was the fifth day of, you know, these two plus miles a day.
Wait, so he's running and then you're doing hit?
Yeah.
You're burning the kid out.
We're knocking it out. But I was like, I was gung-ho today. But it was, we did an afternoon run because we watch WandaVision at 6:30 in the morning every Friday. Because we don't want any spoilers.
You guys are motivated.
So I said, all right, we're going to do this HIIT workout. And it was like, it was legs. And I tried to do the legs workout today after like all this running. And I blasted my legs. I couldn't move for like 2 hours after that. It was.
You know, you have a good leg workout when you can't walk for a week.
I think tomorrow right? and the next day are going to be rough days.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else? Oh, you had that thing. You had the bike advocacy thing.
Yeah, sort of. So I didn't know what I was getting into going into it. And so it's this thing called Lompoc Trails.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know what it was. I thought it was like just trails in the area, you know, and they would just go to trail maintenance and it was, you know, you're just kind of like pulling weeds and setting up like sandbags so they don't get washed out in the rain or something. I didn't know, but I guess there's like close to 100-acre plot of land that was donated or something, or that's open to the public to use.
Uh-huh.
That this foundation left to like somebody to be the steward of.
Hmm.
And this Lompoc Trails organization became this nonprofit they established in 2019, and they were starting to put in, you know, trails in this on this plot of land. And it's a pretty famous place in the area called Lookout Point, and a lot of people go there, especially since gyms closed and you had, you know, people still wanted fitness.
Right.
And it's like 0.7 miles, I don't know what it is, 12-15%, so it's really steep.
Mm.
And you get people like running it and walking it, and you know, you get up there and you can see like over the whole valley.
That's awesome.
And all that stuff, you know. Yeah, it's really pretty. So this organization is taking this plot of land and they want to cut trails and make it like more of a recreation area for people to go and get out in the woods and just have some fun, to do laps or whatever it is. And I think the whole thing with all the trails and everything that they have planned is somewhere around 6.5 miles or something, and there's like multiple different trails.
Oh, that's nice.
So what they're looking at is they want to reestablish, because I think things kind of fell apart during COVID, and they want to reestablish the foundation. They need to pay the property taxes. Oh, wow. They need to start getting things going and fundraising and, you know, you name it. There's like 100 things that need to be done. And
is this called Bodger's Trail?
Yes, that's it. That's the road. Yeah. And so they're reaching out to different people who kind of do this sort of advocacy type stuff, and they want to get like a group of people to continue this cause and everything. So they reached out to me because of what I'm doing on Instagram and various things. And I mean, it seems very cool. They have a kiosk, and they haven't done anything for a year because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And like every month there's like $50 in the kiosk.
Oh, okay.
You know, and people were asking, like, you know, at the thing last night, the meeting, they're like, so, you know, how's the kiosk doing? He goes, well, you know, we get some money in there, you know, we get vape pens and cigarette butts. I'm like, well, those got to be worth something, you know, but yeah, so we're meeting again in March, and I guess they got the Vandenberg Air Force Base Hot Shots. Those are like the fire crew.
Oh, nice.
Who does like the wildfire.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
stuff.
The breakers. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And they're going to be the guys, I guess, for their training and stuff.
Cutting
they're going
to the
use this plot of land for their training, and they're going to cut the trails and all that and scrape out the stuff and chainsaw work.
Looks like they have one trail in there, huh?
Well, that's a road.
Oh, okay.
That's asphalt pavement that goes to the top. And then, like, the plot of land is going to have trails going all around that. Yeah. So, I mean, that, you know, it seems pretty cool. All the guys were, you know, really friendly, motivated. They're trying to get, you know, like a good committee. And then they have to, of course, get their board, you know, president, vice president, treasurer, secretary, all that stuff.
Right.
And get everything reestablished. Once it's all reestablished again and they get like all their tax stuff together and they do, you know, because it is like a real organization. It's not just a bunch of hacks up there with like, you know, pickaxes trying to like illegally cut trails or something. But yeah, so they have a lot of the legal things to shake out and get back from COVID and kind of get these things back in the mix and back in the works. And then once they get back in the works, they'll get the hot shots up there and they'll start getting things going and maintenance. So yeah, it seems like a pretty worthwhile thing. And a lot of people, I mean, there's got to be 100 people a day. You know, it's not the same 100, but I'm just saying like 100, 200 people a day, maybe more. I mean, hundreds of people a day that go up there.
Yeah. It's like the top of Reseda. Have you been up there?
Yeah, sort of. Right.
It looks like a greener top of Reseda.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so people get up there and they just do it for like, you know, they leave work at 3:30 or something. They jet over there. They get like a couple laps in for some fitness and then they go home and make dinner or something, you know. And what we want to do is kind of give them, you know, 6-ish, 7 miles of more trail to just go around and do stuff. And like I said, it's all private. They're trying to, so the organization Lompoc Trails is a nonprofit, but they're trying to make it so the plot of land is attached to the nonprofit.
Oh, okay.
And then you don't have to pay the property tax. And paying property tax on this thing, because it's not part of the city, it's on the county side of things.
But it's private. Yeah.
But it's privately owned, and they're trying to get it to a nonprofit status, which would then put it under like Parks and Rec or something, which would then it's like crazy legal stuff that in order to get that done.
Yeah.
And I don't want to speak out of turn for any of it because I don't know. I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the foundation that owns it.
Right,
and how these
right.
guys came a part of it. And it's kind of weird. But yeah, I mean, the main thing is there's not a lot of things, unfortunately, in the area for people to do because, you know, it's a small town and a lot of the old timers stifle things.
Uh-huh.
Because they don't want to see change,
right.
sadly.
Right.
Yet kids and young families are here I mean, SpaceX is here.
Yeah.
You know, United Launch Alliance, and we do, you know, so there's like engineers and all, there's like all kinds of stuff here. Like there's like rocket scientists here and stuff, and people, they want to have fitness. I mean, you're not talking about like, you know, small town yokels, you know what I mean? It's like, there's like literally like rocket scientists here, you know, and they cut, they leave SpaceX and they go for a hike up this thing and they get some fitness and they go home or whatever. And we want to make it so like, you know, kids have a place or people could go like trail running or like, you know, some short mountain bike loops or something. And, you know, anyway.
And you know, and I think wherever, whenever, and even when we're, when we travel, we're always looking for trails and things to hike and things to do like that. When we go to NorCal, Anne's like, you know.
Yeah, tourism.
Yeah, she finds all the spots for hiking and all that.
We've had people, they take the train up from somewhere south, like San Diego, LA or something. They get off at Surf Beach with their bicycles. They ride down Ocean Boulevard into town, you know, from the beach and the train station. And they'll spend like 4 days here going to restaurants and breweries and wineries and Airbnb and all this stuff. And they kind of hang out in our little town. They ride back to the train at the beach and then they take the train back to like wherever they came from.
Right.
And it's like a cool little getaway for like a long weekend, you know? And
that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cool little town that we live in. It's just, we need to take care of it and be stewards of it because, you know, we can't, like, we're in the 21st century where people go places.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the 50s and 60s where some of the people here want to keep it that and they don't want it to change. Right. And it's like, yeah, nobody came here in the 50s and 60s. I get it. But now it's like getting to be a little trendy. We have our little breweries and coffee shops and things. And
right, right.
And we want to open it up for tourism and stuff, you know, and the old timers, some of them, like, and sadly, they're the ones that probably have the least amount of time left.
Yeah.
And have the most power to keep anybody with the most amount of time from doing anything that's going to make it a better place.
You'll get in there. You'll get in there and shake it up.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying. I'm trying.
Well, let's talk about shaking it up a little bit too with Army of the Dead. How about that?
Oh, you want to go that one first. Okay.
Oh, tell me what you, where do you want to go?
No, Army of the Dead's great. Yeah. I mean, it's all about the Benjamins, right?
I love it. It's a heist movie. It's a heist / zombie movie.
So how does that work, though? It's a heist. I mean, by the time zombies come around. So, okay, let's back up. So we've talked about trailers for, you know, 151 episodes now, right?
Kind of. And was listening to last week's podcast and she was like, it's a half an hour and you haven't even talked about a trailer. And I was like, this is what we do. All right. We have a formula. We follow this script and we go to it.
You're just like, and stop right now. Just stop. So, okay, we've talked about trailers for 151 episodes. Uh-huh. We know trailers are disjointed. And what is a Solo cup doing? What is that thing? Is that water?
No, that's my beer, man.
In a Solo cup? What?
I told you I came down. I took a shower. I wasn't going to go back up there to get my nice glass.
Oh, my God. Right. This guy's at a kegger. Jeez. I just see this red Solo cup. Okay, whatever.
I'm not drinking out of the can.
Decant. Always decant. Yes. I guess no matter what you have, you have to decant. So I can't fault there you for go. That. Okay. We'll get to this point eventually. So disjointed trailers, right?
Yes, yes.
We don't know if the heist happens before the zombie apocalypse or during the zombie apocalypse, but let's, for the sake of argument, say the zombie apocalypse has happened and now they're going to do the heist. Wouldn't the economy be bust and the money is worthless?
Well,
I mean, how is the money worth anything if Vegas is within his... Because you would imagine the rest of the country is too, or the world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to think way back. Think about a year ago right now. and think about the pandemic.
Doing a heist.
And just think. Just
like February 28th and then March 1st rolls around and we go to lockdown.
But I'm just saying at the beginning of a zombie apocalypse, you have to think that it's going to turn around faster than it might, you know? So I think this is like the front end of a zombie apocalypse, you know?
Okay, maybe. But if I see my neighbor eating my other neighbor, I don't care. I'm not going to think, you know, this will eventually turn around.
Yeah.
Who's thinking? You're like, oh my God, my neighbor's eating my neighbor. Like, no, turn around. What does that even mean at that point?
Well, I think this is like a hyper extension of like looting or something that would go on at the beginning of a zombie apocalypse. You know, you'd have looting.
Yes.
And then these guys are next level, you know, professionals. But what I was drawn to about this trailer is
the zombie Elvis,
the zombie. No, the lack of dialogue, man. It's just all action. It's action. And
what do you I mean, Army of the Dead. What do you expect? Like, you know, a Humphrey Bogart
a soliloquy by Batista.
Come on.
But it's done. But it's done really well. I think it's cut together.
You're looking for some major prose or something.
Yeah. Right. We're gonna see this, right?
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. I'm gonna watch it. I mean, I love zombies.
And it's fresh. It's a fresh, you know, like we had the Walking Dead, which is kind of like a traditional zombie.
Is it fresh?
This is fresh, don't you think?
You think so?
I think this angle is on mind.
Maybe. I mean, zombies are zombies. I think it's been done. I think at this stage you watch zombie movies because you're a zombie genre fan. I don't think you're going to glean any new info out of this thing. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that's how the apocalypse started. You know, like, I don't think it matters.
You're just a fan of the genre and you don't really. Okay.
All totally. Right. Yeah. You're like, all right, let's see how the way I view zombie movies, Dawn of the Dead and, you know, all of them, right? To include Walking Dead and everything. The way I view zombie movies is they all take place in the same space, time space, and it's just another group's story.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it boils down to is that, like, it's not like a different zombie apocalypse. It's the same zombie apocalypse.
Right.
It just so happens to be this group's story.
Yeah, and maybe, I think the way that I'm looking at this is that the zombie setting, the zombie apocalypse is more of the setting for this heist movie.
Okay, I see.
And we're, my family, we're the huge heist movie fans. Like, will we let the...
Oh, you guys are all about the Oceans movies.
We love the Oceans movies. We've seen all the Oceans movies. I let them watch Tower Heist with Ben Stiller. We like that one. It's kind of campy.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of heist movies that are just great movies. So this feels like the zombie thing is just the tableau. It's just the backdrop for the heist. Whereas everything else, the true meaning or the true core of every zombie movie or traditional zombie movies is about the primal survival of humanity, you know?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think when you look at The Walking Dead, the zombies are the backdrop, like just like you said with this one.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the primal survival, but I think it's how humanity functions in like a state of nature or something.
Right, right. And I think this one, this Army of the Dead is not that, you know, it's not about them. It's the crew in this one is not far removed from modern society. It feels like they're contemporary, you know, that you aren't in a zombie movie until you've run out of bullets, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
I think
with that said, it still brings me back to the point. What's the reason for the money if it's a zombie apocalypse? And I mean, it comes down to, at that point, ammunition is your currency.
Right.
I don't think anybody cares about your hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, you need the bullets to get more bullets.
Yeah, beans and bullets. That's all it is.
Beans,
right?
And bullets.
I awesome. Don't care. Either way, I'm going to watch it. And maybe it makes me want to watch it more. And the heist takes place pre-zombie apocalypse. And they're in there stealing the money. And for whatever reason, they're in the safe. They're
Oh, and then on the way out.
On the way out, it's a zombie apocalypse. Yeah. And it's like, well, money's not worth anything. Let's fight our way out of here now. and then it's like a Vin Diesel movie with, no, not Vin Diesel. What's his name? The black dude that looks like Vin Diesel. Ving Rhames. I don't know. They look alike. What do you, know, they, but they're both bald. Yeah, it's like a Ving Rhames zombie movie. You know what I mean?
Definitely going to see it. High octane. Yeah.
I'd say thumbs up for watching. Who knows how it's going to be for, you know, I mean, I'm not expecting a whole lot out of it.
Okay. We'll see what Batista does with it.
That's it. All right. Let's jump to Luca.
Here you go.
So
tell me.
Looks very good. Lots of legacy.
Well, I mean, you know, you have Pixar. Pixar's not going to let you forget. Look, it's on behind my... Wally on the wall right here, so, you know.
And that's what I wanted to bring up, though. Okay, it's Pixar. They show the little lamp. He looks at you, you know, how Pixar wants to do. Do they need to say Toy Story and, you know, I mean, just do they need to give you the rundown? I mean, it's Pixar. Like, if you don't know by now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, then this isn't the movie for you.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think it's just...
Who are they messaging with all of the legacy?
All the legacy, I think it's just reminding you of the depth and breadth of what they've brought you.
I guess.
And maybe there's something to be said about the separation from Disney animation, you know? You know, there's Disney animation has a completely different feel. So this is in this Pixar space.
Do you think the average viewer pays attention to that?
I don't think they have to pay attention to it. I think that's part of the subconsciousness of what you're seeing.
Oh, I follow you. Yeah.
So it's like it's important to them to separate themselves a little bit from their brothers, their big sister or whatever you would call it, and just to be in the space where you know that it's a movie. And I think that to me, what that even more than anything else, it kind of signifies that it's a theatrical film movie, not a schmovie. You know what I mean? It's like,
it's a one-off.
All the Pixar stuff before, was it Cars? Either Cars or Toy Story. I mean, Cars and Toy Story are the two big kind of franchises within Pixar. I guess Finding Nemo a little bit too, because they had Finding Dory. They for a long time fought having any sequels. They did not want to do sequels. They did not want to do franchises. They wanted original stories. They had about five stories right at the beginning that they were working on simultaneously, and they just kind of put effort and process into each one of them so they would roll out in succession. So they, because it takes like, 5 years to make an animated movie, you know? So they had a bunch in the hopper at the same time. So I think to me, that's what the legacy sells is that it's like, it's separating it. It's still trying to say we're a pedigree of a pedigree, you know?
Yeah. Pixar certainly is a pedigree. I mean, who can do animation like that? And we talked about this, I don't even remember when, 5, 6, 8 weeks uh-huh. ago, something. But man, when it starts, that animation is so clean looking.
Right.
It's so crisp. But there's no grain. There's no film feel to it. It's just super clean, you know? And I don't know how I feel about that necessarily. I mean,
like it's too clean.
It's too clean. I want some cinema feel to it.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe when you see it on the big screen or something, it'll give you that, because the grain, like the screen's grain will add grain or something.
Did it hit you like a Sony or like an Illumination, like Despicable Me kind of? It had like, you know, those, that animation is that same, it's a very similar kind of animation that has, it's computer generated, but it's clean and it's fluid and it has like, that texture to it. That's that smooth texture. So it was so funny that...
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah,
it's beautifully shot. It's beautifully drawn. And it's beautifully created.
And I like the Italian theme.
did you feel like... I mean, we reviewed it a long time, many years ago now, but Call Me By Your Name.
Oh.
You know, the bicycle and the guy.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of places online where they did some memes where it hit some people like it's Call Me By Your Name. And I was like, yeah, it has, they're both like Italian feel, Mediterranean feel, you know, but.
Yeah, two boys. And I showed it to Tim. I said, Tim, what do you think? Do you want to see this? He said, oh man, way too many fish. I said, come on, you know, just a couple of kids, you know, and they're like mermen.
Right.
Yeah.
How'd you like that reveal when they jumped in the water? What did you think?
First time I saw it, I didn't really know what I was looking at. And I said, did they just turn into like fish or something? So we watched through. I said, let's watch this again. And then I saw it again. And I was like, okay, I see what's going on here. When water touches them, that turns them into the
mer people.
Mermen. Yeah.
Mer boys.
And the mer boys, yeah. And like when he spits the water on him, he like kind of half fishes.
He half changes.
You know, and yeah, I could see that playing out throughout, like that theme playing out throughout the movie. The whole time they're trying to avoid water.
Yeah.
While telling a greater story.
Right. Of course.
Whatever the greater story happens to be.
Yeah.
You know, probably a story of friendship and love and, you know, whatever goes on in these things. But
of brotherhood, fraternity.
Yeah. And all while trying to not get wet.
Now the splash of gremlins. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
But yeah, it looks really good. I'm sure we're going to watch it. I don't see a reason why not. I would assume, you know, we've talked over the past couple of weeks. I would assume this is coming to Disney Plus. It's a theatrical release, I would
say. It says theatricals. Yeah, it says theaters.
Yeah, for sure. But it's going to come to Disney Plus. If I had to guess, it's going to be like...
Short window.
Well, it's going to be in the theater. This is just my speculation.
Uh-huh.
Theater week one, Disney Plus rental... I don't know the price.
$30.
$20. Yeah, $20 to $30. Week two and three, four possibly. And then maybe after that you wait long enough and then like it just somehow becomes a streaming movie.
Right. Well.
And maybe they take it off for a few weeks and then they put it back on as streaming, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think all roads lead to Disney Plus. But this one was I don't think we saw anything of this on the Investors Day 5-hour extravaganza, you know? It was just kind of nodded to that Pixar's going to have some movies out and they'll...
Well, at some point over a 5-hour extravaganza, you probably had to pee.
That's right. I did shift from my guest house to the main house for dinner time because... Dinner was getting ready and I had to bring the laptop up there. So maybe it was during that time.
Yeah, exactly my point.
The transfer.
So you're going to watch this. I mean.
Oh, 100%. 100% going to watch it. And I think that was the kids' big thing when we watched this trailer as a family for us on our side. They were like, oh man, that's going to be in the theaters. How are we going to see it? Like, what are we going to do? So I think we'll see with Raya and the Last Dragon in March here, whether Anne will let me break, you know, whether we can break Anne down as a family and say, hey, come on, let's pony up this $30 and just put this in the, you know, to see the movie. But, you know, when we're very spoiled because for years as a Disney employee, you got to go to the AMC in Burbank at, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 in the morning on Saturday and Sunday of the opening weekend.
And everybody gets to see it.
And they rent out the whole theater because it's, you know, super early and they just put it in, you know, 10 theaters and everybody gets to see it. So yeah, we're super spoiled and we're like, if this is in the theaters, are we going to have to go pay for it? And I was like, I don't know. Are we going to, you know, risk going to the movies in whatever time frame this is in there, you know? So.
So what I would say is with what you just told me, renting the theater, et cetera,
uh-huh.
You know, 8:30 in the morning and so on. Disney execs what they ought to do.
Please,
no, I'm serious.
Please talk to them. I will send this episode to them directly.
You are a Disney employee, and if they're giving you 8:30 in the morning viewing of a fresh release, something like Luca, in the times of COVID, I'm not saying when COVID, whatever it means to be done with COVID, whatever that looks like, whatever that definition is, yes, get back to what you used to do, whatever. Right now, in the age of COVID, give your employees a one-time code so they could watch the movie, or maybe a one-time code that works in this window of time on a Saturday morning between 8 and 10, just like it would otherwise be. I mean, they could, there's technology. Yeah, like we could do these things, you know?
Disney's a technology company now, so we should totally be able to do that.
It's like there's
100 ways to do it.
For the people who would otherwise get the viewing for free, then what is the big deal if you just put in a little, you know, I don't know, put in like your employee number?
Yeah. No, totally. I get it. Yeah.
67352-TED. Oh my God, I just gave it away. Sorry, Ted. But no, you put that in and it's good for one viewing this thing at your leisure. It, like, I don't know. I mean, I could totally see that being easily implemented and it achieves the same thing.
Treat it like Academy screenings, like Academy screeners
or whatever. It doesn't even matter. You're an employee. I mean, just
that's what I'm saying. There's a list. There's people that are in the unions and SAG or whatever, and, you know, WGA, and they're on a list because they're in this organization. And because they're on that list, they get screeners. You know what I mean? And nowadays, the screener means you get a code in the mail. Sometimes you still get a DVD on the very rare occasions. But yeah, it usually is a code and a website, and you log into the website, and then you're there. So I totally say put this behind the MyID wall, and we can, you know, let us add it.
I have a couple other thoughts with that. One is, I don't know what their thinking is. One of the thinkings might be, well, we don't want to do that because Ted's going to invite friends over like Jim and Clarissa and the boys. And then now you're going to have 8 people watching for free and we're going to lose out on that revenue.
And in a time where revenue is for the theaters is sorely needed, you know, like,
right.
They are brothers in production, you know.
Could that happen? Will it happen? Yes. I'm not saying it would be abused, but there will be people who are going to say, let's get together. We're going to watch it tonight. You're going to have people at your house and you're going to do that. Okay. Which leads me to the point of like piracy and so on. So let's say it's, I don't know, Ice Age 5 or something, right? And let's say for some reason, I don't know how, but let's say for some way I wind up with a copy of Ice Age 5, or I wouldn't say a copy, a viewing of Ice Age 5. Is that piracy, or is that stealing a viewing without paying for it or something? You know, the real answer is no, because they might say, oh, well, you got to watch it and you didn't pay any money. But it's like, you know what? Yeah, I got to watch it. I wasn't planning on watching it. And if I had to pay for it, I wouldn't watch it anyway. So some movies you're like, I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to do whatever it takes to watch because, you know, like you want to see it.
Right.
Then there's other movies where you watch it, whether it's paid for or not, but you would never have paid for it in the beginning. So it's really not piracy because...
because they wouldn't have ever gotten your eyeballs either way.
They never would have got my money in the first place. You know, so, and I'm not saying that's this movie. I'm just saying that, like, that's my argument to say just give it to the employees with a one-time passcode or something, like with your employee number or something. And if people invite friends and family over to your house, you're not going to invite like 100 people. You might invite like your mom and dad or something, or you might invite like a neighbor.
Frank and Barbara, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you're not going to lose that much money on it in the grand scheme of things.
And you're not going to be like projecting in the backyard and charging $5 a head. You know what I mean? I think that's their big concern is like, you know, not theirs, but I think in general, the worst case scenario is somebody exhibits it in their backyard and charges, you know, 100 people $5 a person to come and watch it, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
But I mean, that's a lot of work too, you know, so I don't know.
Could that happen? I mean, yes, it could happen. The way I look at, I mean, let's say how many employees would have access to that, right?
150,000.
I don't know. There's that many? Yeah. That go to Burbank 150,000? No.
No, but I mean, if you're going to open it up to...
No, but how many people... I'm saying, how many people go to Burbank to watch this thing?
Oh, a lot. I mean, for every employee, they do family... They do either...
10,000 people.
Two or four. How many people fit in a movie theater, you think?
I have no idea. Like one theater?
Uh-huh.
400.
Okay. And then you do... Let's say they do 15 theaters.
So you're talking about 5,000 people.
5,000 people. So pass up to 5,000.
Okay, 5,000 people.
So anywhere from 1 to 5,000 people. 1,000 to 5,000.
So say 5,000 households, right? Because there's probably not a lot of husbands and wives both working for Disney. So let's say one person is a household and they bring their family to go watch it. So 5,000 households. Will somebody put it up in their backyard on a screen? Maybe. But whatever. Maybe you sign something where if you get caught doing that,
you're fired.
Know, like, you're fired. Yeah. Like, is it really worth your job to invite the neighborhood to watch a movie? No. Like, I don't think so. I think people have more integrity than what... And when I say Disney, I'm talking about the entire industry.
Right.
I think... People have more integrity than what Disney would believe they have. And that goes for Universal and Paramount
Warner Brothers,
and all
yeah.
the other ones, too. Yeah, you know. I don't think... will somebody steal it and do something nefarious? Sure.
But they'll do it. They'll do that anyway.
Right.
They're the same people sneaking in with the movie, with the camcorder into the theater, you know?
And then putting it on a torrent.
Right.
You know, I don't... You know, yeah. I don't think... If you look at the vast majority of your population of employee, I don't think they're out there trying to screw you and say, that's it, I'm going to show the whole neighborhood and make money off of this. You know, like, I just don't think, I think people have more ethics than that.
Right.
And if there is a jerk out there that does it, I mean, maybe, but like.
Then don't make everybody, don't make 4,999 suffer.
100%, man. No, I'm serious. Right. Like, I don't know. Anyway, let's finish up with The Handmaid's Tale season 4. So have you watched any of the seasons?
I have watched the first season, and then when COVID started, when I got Hulu, I tried to watch season 2 and I picked it up. But season 2 was kind of, I don't know. And then I was like, maybe I should skip to season 3. And then I was lost. I was like, I don't even know what's going on anymore.
Yeah, you can't skip.
So I guess I need to go back to season 2, start season 2 over again. This trailer for season 4 looks amazing. You know, it feels like it's right in the wheelhouse of what... Did you read the book?
No, Clarissa did. And then when she finished, it had to go back to the library. Oh. It was a library book.
Right, right, right.
And I just need to check it out again.
Yeah.
So I'm finishing a few other books and stuff, and I do want to get to it. And I asked Clarissa, I said, how close to it, you know, to the show? She said it follows along closely with season 1, and then it more or less...
Has to do its own thing from there, right?
And then it kind of ends. But I think it was like... 2018, 2019, and I don't remember the exact year the first one came out. Maybe that was like early 2000s or no, that was like 80s, I think. Yeah, I think it was 80s it mm-hmm. came out, late 80s. And it was like she wrote the second book 35 years later.
Oh.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm a fan. I like it. It looks like it's going to be the last season.
Right.
The way the trailer ends looks like it's the way the season's going to end, or the way the series is going to end, where she crosses into Canada and says, you know, I'm a U.S. citizen.
Right, right.
And then it's like, all right, welcome. You know, you're now a refugee or something. Or it could just be, you know, obviously writers can write anything. And they could write it to say, I'm a U.S. citizen. Okay, come back to the, or welcome to Canada. And then season 5 is, well, I got to go back now and save everybody.
Right, right. We got to go back. So, we got to go back. That's the old line from Lost.
Never saw Lost.
Oh, man. You've saved yourself a lot of aggravation, but it is.
I heard.
The first just why, you know, there's this moment, what is it? It's like three or four seasons in when Jack opens his eyes again, or somebody, when somebody opens their eyes, there's a moment where you as an audience can just choose to like not just ignore like the last one or two seasons and just be like, all right, this is where it ended. We don't have to do anything. It's satisfying, you know? And then they kind of like drag it out a little longer. And I like some of the older stuff, but anyway. So yeah. And just so you know, some breaking news, not breaking, but it was already renewed for season 5.
Oh, well, there you go then. So this isn't the last.
And this book is called The Testament.
The Testament, right.
So the Testaments, the first three seasons are off of The Handmaid's Tale. And now this one is off of the second book, the sequel. So it's interesting that the first three seasons.
So season 4 is off the second book?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah. So I guess I will have to read then both of them.
No, you'd have to read two books.
Oh, God. Yeah, it looks great. I can't wait to watch.
I love the paramilitary stuff, you know, the whole caravan of militia or whatever, you know, it just leads itself into this war, you know, it's going to be an all out war for women's rights, you know, like,
yeah. And it looks like they're leading, like the cityscape and everything, it looks like a destroyed skyline of Chicago.
Oh, it does. Okay. So that's why you're saying the Canada thing that might take place.
I think from what I was reading and stuff, I think it leads, like the whole thing takes place. Because the season prior, season 3, there was this whole battle in Chicago because Chicago was like the last stronghold.
Okay.
And they went in on this bombing campaign or whatever. And it looks like they're going into Chicago then to, like, I don't know, find women or something. Or I don't even know what it is. But yeah, it's insane, man. It's like it's what happens when you let the religious wing nuts go crazy. You wind up with the Handmaid's Tale, you know. But yeah, I don't know. Is Anne into these kind of stories, or
she is not? They're too.
Now why not though? Like, Clarissa loves this.
They're far too bloody, you know. She doesn't. I had her. So she likes action movies, right? And I don't know if you remember Six Underground, the action movie with So they, you know, it's like it's like capers across Europe and stuff, right?
Well, Six Underground's the same guy that plays
Deadpool.
Deadpool.
Right, right.
Yeah. Whatever his name is.
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds.
So yeah, Ryan Reynolds in a movie where he can like show his face and be a good looking character. But yeah, so I said, oh, you like Ryan Reynolds? You like action movies? Watch this movie. And she's watching it. She watched half of it on the treadmill, on the elliptical over there. And she was just like, it's kind of bloody. She's like texting me. She goes, there's a lot of blood, a lot of death in this thing. I was like, it's an action movie. You know, it's just kind of you know, it's like, it's a little popcorn death. You know, they don't take death too seriously. It's kind of like action movie deaths, you know? But she's like,
oh, if you can count the amount of deaths in half of these movies,
it's not enough.
The funeral costs would be like, I mean, it would exceed the national debt, right? You know?
And I think The Handmaid's Tale takes it a little, even a step further, where it makes, there's such gruesomeness. There's such
the hangings, you know?
There's such cruelty amongst people. And it's just like, ugh, when I watch it, even I twinge a little bit. She can't handle it. She can't take the human cruelty of these kind of shows.
She likes the dig.
That is her wheelhouse. And I luckily I stayed awake for
the piano.
She likes the piano. Yes, the English patient. Yes, yeah, so let's name
the English patient.
That is
Driving Miss Daisy.
Okay, yeah.
So we both watched Wanda. You watched it at 6:30 in the morning, and we watched
five minutes ago.
Literally right before it ended. Bam. Ted, how's your beer? Like, that's how it went
down. Did you see the mid-credit scene? Spoilers. Okay.
Spoiler, this is a week old. If you haven't watched it by now, well, bad on you. We're going to get into it.
Okay.
You're talking about the White Vision?
Yes, the White Vision.
Okay, yeah, we did see that at the end.
Okay, good.
The little button at the end?
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
What'd you think? How do you...
It reminded me of like A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, that's what they're that's what they were saying. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't read that. I mean, like I said, we watched it and bam, you know, it's episode 151.
Yeah, previously on, podcast. Right? I mean, the tropes of television over the past 50 years is just being unfolded in the titles of episodes and everything that they do. Yeah, it's truly built into this crescendo of storytelling, right? I mean, it's like every show is better than the last. Every show has this satisfying parts to it, you know, and every episode is great. And then you think, oh, how are they going to top this? And then they're like, oh, we can top that, you know, and they top it in different ways because
they do.
To me, this episode was the most emotionally laden episode of the whole series, of the whole season.
Clarissa had tears. And I'm thinking, but he's a robot. Like, I don't know why you're crying. He's a robot, you know, but
no, it's not. It's Wanda's reaction to knowing that he's not there. To putting her hand on it, you know, but we've gotten into space where like, all right, guys, it's 6:30 in the morning. I'm going to turn it on. And if you guys are just going to hear it, it's not going to be, you're going to get spoilers, you know, if you don't get out of bed and watch this with me, you know? So we watch it.
That's one way to get him up.
We watch him. We watch it in the morning. Now this is the second Friday we've done it first thing in the morning. And then at dinner time, they're like, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to watch WandaVision again? You know, should we watch it again? And I said, no, turn on Nerdist. And we have YouTube on the television and we just turn on Nerdist and we watch the explainer for the episode. And it's
98 Easter eggs.
Everything you missed in episode 8 of WandaVision.
I missed nothing, but I missed everything. You know,
so we watched Nerdist and we're big fans, and it was so funny because Nerdist ended and dinner wasn't over, and Anne was just like, find something else. I was like, oh, look, here's another one. She was like, but that's not Nerdist, we only want to watch Nerdist. So we watch that, and that's our dinner recap of WandaVision, and Anne's always like, well, we should watch WandaVision again after we watch the explainer. And I'm like, yeah, I'm open to that. But, you know, we got to go podcast. So let's go do that.
Yeah. No, it was, I mean, I really enjoyed it. This is the last episode, right?
Nope. Next week. One more.
Oh, there's nine. Okay. Okay. Because if it ended today, today, and it would have been a fine ending to an entire season.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, it could. No, I'm just saying, like, here comes Vision, the White Vision, whatever it is.
Season 2, White Vision, right? Is that what you think? Right.
Exactly. But to have another episode, I'm happy.
Well, here's the mind explosion for the last episode.
Uh-oh.
They have, because of the way they've written it and because of all the speculation, they have to, and you know, when you look at the way that just globally when they ended Mandalorian, they ended Mandalorian as they wove in Boba Fett. And then at the end, you have this introduction of Book of Fett, right? Book of Boba. And you have the introduction to another story that's coming down the pike, right? They have speculation that this movie of WandaVision is leading into at least two, if not three, major other stories within the MCU. It's going to lead into Doctor Strange's sequel, Doctor Strange and the Madness of the Multiverse or whatever. And the next Spider-Man, what is it now? It's called No Way Home. That's the new title for the third Spider-Man. And possibly Bucky and Falcon. So it could pull out Doctor Strange and Spider-Man in the final episode next week. Or it could just nod to them. But Wanda's going to be a large character. They've already, you know, said she's going to be a large character in the new Doctor Strange movie. So it makes sense that Doctor Strange would show up next week. You know, if maybe in the end credit scene, the button there, or maybe a larger role, who knows? But excited to see how it all ends up. And like, you know, last week we had Monica Rambeau getting her powers.
I was expecting her this week.
Yeah, you know, it was a little bit odd to have her missing this week. But I guess the other Pietro, whatever she said.
Pietro, yeah.
I guess he stole her away. So We're going to have to get her free in the last episode.
Oh, man. What else you watch?
What did you watch while I think about what we were watching?
Slow week this week.
Jurassic Park with the boys.
Jurassic Park. Yeah, that was a rental. It was like $4 or something. You know, 1993. I mean, it's an old one, you know, but you know, Newman getting taken away. And I mean, you got to always love that scene.
Right.
And then watched a documentary, Crack, Cocaine, Corruption, and Conspiracy.
Oh, okay.
So really, you know, it's like I knew a lot about it, you know, and you hear this stuff. Oh, the CIA brought crack into the black neighborhoods. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, the interesting story, though, about it and how it connected with the Iran-Contra scandal.
Right.
Mostly came in through L.A. And then the L.A. gangs then distributed it throughout the United States. And just it got into how policing became militarized,
right?
First under Bush Senior and then Clinton. And the really what militarized the police was this one flashpoint where the police more or less just let crack do its thing because it was just another black guy getting shot or whatever. And like,
ugh, yeah.
And nobody cared, you know? And there was this 22-year-old New York City rookie cop sitting in the car, and some crack dealer, gangbanger guy, whatever it was, just comes up and just like point blank shoots him, kills him, execution style in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like from that point, that was like the flash that militarized the police to what we know today.
The war on drugs.
Well, the war on drugs, but also like it was at that point the police just got the funding that allowed them to get the armored vehicles, that allowed them to get all the weaponry and the body armor, and just the federal government just flooded police departments to say, go and just round up everybody and, you know, let's just start like no mercy,
right,
kind of a thing. Because that 22-year-old kid who got executed in the police car, it was like a slap in the face to the government. The government just responded like
full force.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was just, we're not going to let this go. And they just brought down the full power of the U.S. government on like crack dealers and stuff. The biggest thing I got out of it is, you know, yeah, okay, crack dealers.
Not the pillars of the community.
Well, no, but there's a few things going on. One is, you know, and I like how one guy is saying, you can't get a Cuban cigar in the country.
Right.
But there's just tons of coke coming over the border. The second, you know, so the federal government definitely had a hand. I mean, the hypocrisy was pretty heavy. The other part of it, though, is dealers are one side of the coin. You know, when you think about whoever your clientele is, the dealers are the ones peddling the shit that they're peddling, right?
Right. Right.
The saddest part of the story is the sting operations of the people buying it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing stings on addicts and they're criminalizing addiction.
Right.
And then just, you know, I get it. You have a problem. You know, I'm not discrediting the problem. You have a problem, but criminalizing an addiction rather than providing the help the people needed to rehab.
Right.
You know, to rehab both from the addiction and then to get away from that and to get away from prostitution, you know, to get away from all the nefarious ways.
Well, all of the other stuff you end up in the world of.
Well, yeah, people are doing whatever it takes to get money to get the drug. Provide them with the help and the rehab that they need, and don't send them to prison. You know, I mean, they're addicted. They're not criminals.
You know? Oh, Jimmy. Isn't it the same thing, right? No, I'm just kidding.
No, but I'm just saying you can make a different argument for the dealers, yeah, I guess, yeah. Right? I mean, that's kind of a different side of the coin. But man, it's like in The Wire, right? Like Bubbles. I mean, Bubbles was one of my favorite characters because he just wanted his next fix.
Right.
And he was doing what it took to get the fix. But when you know, like they say, when you follow the money, that's when you start finding what, you know, where the corruption is and everything. And man, the poor, like, addicted people. And they showed this scene, man. Well, and let me back up a second. They talked about women and women being the scourge of the entire problem because they were the ones getting pregnant and having crack babies, right? And saying if it wasn't for the women, this wouldn't be a problem, kind of. So it was like a weird way to phrase it, and it's the way the media at the time in the 80s and 90s phrased it and framed it was, you know, like it was very like misogynistic and anti-women.
Yeah.
And the reality is the crack baby syndrome and all that stuff was such, I mean, it, I'm not saying it didn't happen, it did, but it was really a small percentage of the story, and the media made it this enormous percentage.
Right. It was a big, it was easy headlines.
A bigger deal than, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, one is too many, but you know, what I'm saying is though, like they made it out like it was like 60% when it was like, you know, 0.6% or something.
Oh, man.
And, but they had this one scene and they round up all these women, right? Black women, and they're all in shackles and chains. And it was all these like white guys, these white cops, right? All men. And they're just herding, literally herding with like cattle prods and stuff. These black women in shackles and chains onto buses to go off to prison. And this one woman was like, while we were driving off, I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know anything. But all I could think of were my ancestors.
Yeah.
And that we didn't come very far.
Right. It's awful.
And you're watching it and you're like, wow, that's like horrible looking.
Yeah.
You know, like all these white guys shuffling all these black women in
shackles.
You know, like, it's just like, oh God, the way it looked was just, I mean, it was slavery you know, like 102.
Right. Ugh.
But yeah, it was
heavy.
And that was
that's
on Netflix. Heavy. It was. And it was on Netflix. And what got me to watch it was, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s and you hear about all this stuff and living in the city of Chicago and just like you in D.C. and everything, you knew the neighborhoods where these things went down and all that, you know, and the projects and all this stuff. And I thought, you know what, I'll watch and see what it's about. And, you know, it puts it in perspective like years later when you're 30 years removed.
Right.
You know, I would say at the time I was just as guilty where I'm like, ah, fuck them, those goddamn addicts. You know, like, you know, that's just the way the news portrayed it and stuff, you know, and 35 years or whatever removed or 30 years removed, you look at it and you're like, dude, we didn't do that right.
No,
like,
not at all.
We totally screwed up, you know, like as a country.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, we still have people serving time in prison for all that. It's just horrible.
We have people serving time in prison for marijuana, and marijuana is like legal, like in so many states, and people are still doing time for it, you know?
For like an ounce or something. I would recommend watching it. I mean, I thought it was really...
It sounds depressing, though.
Yeah.
You got to be in the right state of mind.
I agree.
I'm a little too wrapped up in COVID right now to have anything that's downer. I pulled up the Challenger doc that you talked about last week.
Oh, that was depressing too.
And I was just like, I'm not in the right headspace for this now. I can't do it, man.
Okay, so speaking of headspace.
Yeah.
Me and Clarissa are looking for something to watch, right? And we're on Netflix and we're thumbing through and it's like, oh, here's a show, 9 seasons. Oh, here's a show, 12 seasons. Oh, here's a show, 7 seasons. And every single time I'm like, no.
I don't have the investment.
Some of them are like 22 episodes or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not going to do 9 seasons of 22 episodes a season. Like, I just don't have I don't want to get into the time commitment.
We're still pounding out the West Wings, and we've stalled a little on the West Wings because it's just too much to go through.
Yeah, we're still doing the Clone Wars. I mean, we're like season 5 of the Clone Wars. Now, granted, we only watch a couple a month at this point.
Right.
But we're at season 5 of the Clone Wars, and we're just like, oh, my God, man. We have how far along to go? Like, it's just, it's brutal. Too many.
So we watched a couple other things just to keep the ball rolling. Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No, I haven't, but I'm familiar with Percy Jackson.
Yeah, so it's a good solid action movie, you know, kid-friendly action movie.
Right.
And then we wrapped that up a few days ago, and then now we're in the middle of Infinity War.
Oh, you're back to Infinity War. Now, why that one and not any others, or just...
I think WandaVision, you know, every time WandaVision ends, they try to serve you up Ultron. And I'm like, yeah, Ultron, I get it. But I'm like, I feel like the stuff that they're talking about in WandaVision is coming off of Endgame and Infinity War. So
you get Ultron served to you as well.
Yes. I think that's universal for watching WandaVision. Because it's so origin story of where they are.
Yeah, okay, I got you. Because so many times... whatever you get fed to you is unique. Different depending yeah. on your viewing habits, you know?
But you have to develop that over time in viewing. And I think because of the way that Disney Plus is wired, I think they're more tent poles. Mandalorian was a tent pole. Now WandaVision's a tent pole.
Gotcha.
You know, so you have a little less variation on what people are watching.
They don't have the data yet.
They don't have the data, but they also don't have the depth. They don't need the depth that Netflix needs without the pedigrees that Netflix doesn't have. Netflix doesn't have pedigrees, so you have to kind of hunt for what you want to see. And that's why they produce so much, because they need variety to keep you involved. But it feels like if Disney Plus can continue to produce hits the way that Marvel and Lucas and Pixar and all these other pieces can produce hits that pull in these huge audiences across all four quadrants, then they don't need the data to drive people to other different things.
So you're watching Infinity War to kind of fill in the blank of things you may have forgotten?
Well, no. I mean, just to remember, because, you know, they're like, when she says, I can't.
Well, that's what I mean, to remember. I said forgotten, you said remember. I mean, that's kind of the same thing,
it's two,
I think, right?
Two sides of the same coin, yes.
Right, right.
I'm trying to be positive, like, we're remembering it.
Okay, sure. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, so we're halfway through that.
Okay, cool. How'd your beer finish?
My beer finished nice. It was mellow. It just mellowed. It didn't, you know, I was sometimes with Belgians, to me, they just overpower with the yeast, and the yeast just overtakes everything. And, you know, but this just mellowed out. Everything mellowed. Everything was, you know, well balanced. And then it just finished. It was nice.
Nice.
The keg cup had a nice little touch too, you know, just to...
There you go. Yeah, mine finished very honey forward.
Oh, okay.
So it almost changed its profile and became like, it was almost like a spoonful of honey with every sip.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it became sweeter in that regard. A very good beer, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, good. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, it was nice.
Awesome.
The ugly sweater beer. So, all right, Ted. Well, I had another fantastic night.
Excellent night. Thank you.
Good talking to you for episode 151.
See you next week.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.